Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter Jr. and Alice Bryant. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter Jr.
China has confirmed that a second Canadian citizen has been detained since Canada's arrest of a Chinese business official earlier this month. Foreign Ministry spokesman Liu Kang spoke to reporters in Beijing Thursday about the situation. Liu said that businessman Michael Spavor and former diplomat Michael Kovrig had been detained on Monday. Kovrig had been reported as missing earlier this week. Reports of Spavor's disappearance began to show up on Wednesday. Liu said the two Canadians are suspected of acts that harm state security and that their legal rights were being safeguarded. He said Beijing security and state security officials in the city of Dandong, Liaoning Province, had taken measures against Spavor and Kovrig. Spavor is director of PICTU Cultural Exchange. It plans sports and educational exchanges with North Korea. He has met North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Spavor also has been a translator for former National Basketball Association player Dennis Rodman during his visits to North Korea. Before his detention, Spavor told Reuters news agency that he was working with North Korean officials and possible investors in Dandong. Kovrig is the Northeast Asia Senior Advisor for the International Crisis Group. He served as a Canadian diplomat from 2003 to 2016. The arrests of the two Canadians took place about 1 week after the arrest by Canada of a top official with Chinese technology company Huawei Technologies. Meng Wanzhou was arrested in Vancouver, Canada. Canadian officials arrested Meng after the United States released a warrant for her arrest. She is accused of violating U.S. sanctions on Iran. On Tuesday, a Canadian judge released Meng from jail after a bail payment of $10 million. However, she is to appear in court at a later date and is under house arrest. Meng is chief financial officer of Huawei Technologies, a company created by her father. It is one of the world's biggest telecommunications companies. U.S. officials accuse Meng of lying to banks about Huawei's control of a company based in Hong Kong that reportedly sold products to Iran. Iran is currently under strong U.S. sanctions. If tried and found guilty in the United States, Meng could face up to 30 years in prison. After her arrest, China called for Meng's immediate release. Officials say that China has not linked Kovrig's detention to Meng's arrest in Canada. However, Canadian diplomatic experts have said it is likely that the two cases are linked. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
The World Cup, the movie Black Panther, Meghan Markle, and the deaths of several famous people are among the most popular Google searches of 2018. The search engine company this week released its yearly ranking of search terms that had the highest growth in comparison to the year before. The World Cup final between France and Croatia is at the top of Google's list. The second and third most popular search topics were for the young musicians Avicii and Mac Miller. Both died in 2018. Sweden's Avicii started his music career at the age of 16. He retired after 10 years and killed himself in April at the age of 29. American singer Mac Miller died of a drug overdose in September. He was only 26 years old. Stan Lee took the fourth spot on the list. He was the creator of famous comic book characters like Spider-Man, the Hulk, and Black Panther. He died in November at the age of 95. Black Panther was the fifth most searched term. The superhero movie broke box office records around the world. It was also the most tweeted about movie ever. The much-discussed May wedding of Britain's Prince Harry and American actor Meghan Markle landed Markle in sixth place on Google's 2018 list. American cook and television personality Anthony Bourdain, musician XXXTentacion, scientist Stephen Hawking, and fashion designer Kate Spade also were among the top 10 Google searches. Bourdain and Spade both killed themselves in June within the same one-week period. Their suicides led to strong calls for more mental health treatment and suicide prevention efforts.
Ask 100 people whether they love to travel, and most of them will probably say yes. Discovering a new place can be fun and exciting, but getting to that place is often a lot less enjoyable. Flying is a popular travel method, but airports can be frustrating places. Having to speak a foreign language in an airport can add to the frustration. Today, we will share some English phrases that can help you survive any airport experience. Let's begin with check-in. At an airport, check-in is where you go to let the airline know that you have arrived. At check-in, you can also get your boarding pass. The document has your flight information on it. It is proof that you purchased the flight. You cannot get on the plane without one. Many airports offer two ways to check in, through a machine or with an airline employee. Here is what you'll be asked if you get your boarding pass from the employee.
Hello, may I see your ID?
Your ID is your identification, such as a passport or driving document. You can answer, sure, or here you go, and give the person the document. If you use the machine, you can enter the ticket or reservation number you received when you purchased the flight. At the check-in area, you can also check your bags. This means giving your bags, also called luggage, to an airline employee to be stored during the flight. Bags you give to the employee are called checked bags, checked baggage, or checked luggage. Here's the question airline employees ask to find out if you want to check bags.
Will you be checking any bags today?
Or they may say it this way.
Do you have any checked bags today?
You can answer yes or no and tell them how many.
Yes, just this one.
They will then tell you to put the bag on a machine to measure the weight. Here's what they will say.
Please place your bag on the scale.
But some bags are small enough to fit in the passenger area of the plane. The bag you keep with you on the plane is called a carry-on bag or simply a carry-on. Sadly, there are times when your carry-on does not meet weight or size restrictions. In such cases, you'll hear something like this.
I'm sorry, but your bag is too heavy. You'll have to check it.
I'm sorry, your bag is too big. You'll have to check it.
Okay, so you've finished at the check-in area. Now it's time to go through security. In line, you may hear a security employee announce this to the crowd.
Please have your IDs and boarding passes out.
That means have your documents ready to show the security person. Security workers also check bags and other belongings. Sometimes you have to place such things in a plastic container called a bin. Security workers may ask if you have any liquids, foods, or medicines.
Are you traveling with any liquids?
Okay, you made it through security with ease. Congratulations! Time to go to your gate, the seating area where you wait for your plane to board. At the gate, here's an announcement you might hear.
Attention passengers on Flight 95 to Chicago. Your flight has been delayed due to weather conditions. The new departure time is 5:45.
So, your flight is delayed 3 hours. But let's say Chicago is not your final destination. You are supposed to fly another plane from Chicago to your final destination. That is called a layover in American English. You might also hear it called a stopover. The delay means you will miss your flight out of Chicago. But don't worry. Just let the person at the airline counter know.
Hi, I missed my connecting flight to Los Angeles. What should I do?
Airlines generally have solutions ready, such as putting you on the next flight or putting you in a hotel for the night. After an international flight, you will be directed through customs. That is where government officers approve or reject entrance into the country. The customs officer will ask for your passport and may or may not have questions. Here are five common questions you might hear at customs.
What is the purpose of your trip?
How long do you intend to stay?
Can I see your return ticket?
Where will you be staying?
What is your occupation?
Preparing this information before your trip will help make the process easier. For example, if you're staying with a friend or at a hotel, have the person or hotel's name and address ready. I'm Alice Bryant.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. In 1801, America had a new president, Thomas Jefferson from the state of Virginia. Jefferson had already done much for his country. He wrote the Declaration of Independence in 1776. He served as America's first ambassador to France and the first Secretary of State. Now he would govern the nation. Thomas Jefferson was happy and hopeful as he took office. His new political party, the Republicans, had defeated the older Federalist Party. The Federalists had controlled the cabinet and the Congress during President George Washington's two terms. George Washington was not a Federalist, but America's second president, John Adams, was. Altogether, the Federalists had been in power for 12 years. The Federalists and the Republicans held very different opinions about how to govern the nation. The Federalists feared that Jefferson and his followers would destroy the social order of the new country. And Jefferson's Republican Party feared that the Federalists would put power in the hands of a few elite people.
The fears of neither side were really justified, but it was a remarkable moment because the election of 1800 was extremely partisan, but it was also the first occasion in which power was exchanged from one party to another without any kind of violence or a revolution.
Andrew O'Shaughnessy directs an international center for Jefferson studies at Thomas Jefferson's home called Monticello. He says emotions between the Federalists and the Republicans were still strong when Jefferson took office. But in his inaugural address, the new president extended the hand of peace and friendship to the Federalists. In his words, "We are all Republicans. We are all Federalists." The leader of the Federalist Party, Alexander Hamilton, did not accept Jefferson's offer of friendship. As Jefferson became president, Hamilton made a speech attacking him. Hamilton had decided to continue fighting the Democratic movement in the United States. But Hamilton's opposition did not worry Jefferson. "Of course," he said, "the top leaders of the Federalists, men like Hamilton, could never be changed. He was more interested in bringing their followers to his side. He was sure he could show even the Federalists that his program was good for all." In fact, Andrew O'Shaughnessy says, Jefferson expected the Federalist Party just to disappear. He says, people in Jefferson's time did not think a two-party system was essential to democracy.
They thought if people acted in a public spirit and put aside their own self-interest, that they would all recognize the common good and act together.
And he says Jefferson believed his party, the Republicans, represented the true spirit of the American Revolution. In those early days of 1801, Jefferson said, "We can no longer say that there is nothing new under the sun. What we have done in this country is all new. The force of public opinion is new. But the most important and pleasing newness is that we have changed our government without violence. This shows a strength of American character that will give long life to our republic. We have proved that freedom of the press, freedom of speech, and freedom of thought are necessary in a healthy nation. Let men argue with each other. The arguments may become bitter, but the bitterness is just a cloud that passes. And out of the arguments will come the truth. As for the Federalist leaders, they, except for Hamilton, believed Jefferson's friendly words in his inaugural speech showed he would respect their party. George Cabot, the strongest Federalist leader in New England, usually agreed with Hamilton, but now he did not. Cabot said, "I believe that our new president wants to stay out of war. We do not have to worry any longer that he plans to join France against England. He is friendly to us and wants our help. Therefore, I am sure that he will not dismiss any of our people from their government positions." Another Federalist leader, Timothy Pickering, the Secretary of State under President Adams, said, "I am satisfied that Jefferson will not make any important changes in government policy and that he will depend for support more on us Federalists than on the Democrats." During those first few weeks of the new government, the Federalist leaders really believed that Jefferson was afraid of them. They believed that he had surrendered to them and would be destroyed as the leader of the Republican Party. One Federalist wrote, "Soon Jefferson will feel the bite of his dirty Democrats when they attack him." Jefferson soon did hear complaints from Republican leaders who felt he was being too kind to the Federalists. William Giles, a Jeffersonian leader in Virginia, wrote, "Of course I am very pleased by the president's inaugural speech. The president's program is correct. It agrees with the opinions of the people. But I still think that the president's success will depend on how he carries out his program. Let him offer friendship to the Federalists, but he must not permit friendship to become weakness. His friends believe that the first thing he must do is to clean out the executive branch of the government. He must dismiss from office all men who are enemies of the Republican program." Even James Monroe wrote a strong letter to the president, "Your speech and your program are healthy and good, but there are serious dangers ahead of you. There are two parties in this country, not one. One of these parties, the Federalists, has controlled the government for 12 years and has hurt our nation greatly. Some of these Federalists now speak softly to you and promise their support. But you must remember, too, that there are thousands of good Republicans who have always supported you. If you keep Federalists in office, if you appoint Federalists to office, many of these good Republicans will stop believing in you. Certainly, there is no reason why you should give jobs to men who worked for the Federalist government of John Adams. Certainly, you must throw out the officials of the last government who stole money and sold their services. Do this, and you will give strength to our Republican movement. Please understand me. I am speaking only of high offices. I do not ask that you dismiss small officials because they are Federalists. They have a right to their political beliefs. Let them keep their jobs. This will show that you are a president who can accept different political opinions. As Federalists and Republican leaders kept asking Jefferson for positions in the government, the president was thinking of his cabinet. He quickly decided who would be his Secretary of State and Secretary of the Treasury. James Madison of Virginia, Jefferson's old friend and the father of the Constitution, would be Secretary of State. For Secretary of the Treasury, Jefferson chose Albert Gallatin of Pennsylvania, the brilliant leader of the Republicans in Congress. Gallatin understood economics and finance as well as Alexander Hamilton did. For the War Department, Jefferson turned to General Henry Dearborn of New England. Jefferson's first choice to be Secretary of the Navy was Judge Robert Livingston, the great lawyer from New York. But Judge Livingston rejected this position. Jefferson finally chose Robert Smith of Baltimore, Maryland. The president had already appointed one man from New England to his cabinet, Secretary of War Dearborn. Now he turned to New England for two more appointments. Jefferson knew that the strength of the Federalist Party was greater in New England than in any other part of the country. He believed that there was no better way to move New England away from the Federalist program than to give cabinet positions to men from New England. And so, Jefferson found his attorney general in Levi Lincoln of Massachusetts. Like Dearborn, Lincoln was a patriot of the American Revolution. He had been a supporter of Jefferson from the beginning. He was famous as a lawyer in Massachusetts, where he was the top leader of the Republican Party. Jefferson turned to New England as well for the Postmaster General. It was not yet a cabinet office, but its importance was growing. The president gave this appointment to Gideon Granger, a lawyer, businessman, and writer. Granger was one of the strong Jeffersonians in the state of Connecticut. Such was Jefferson's cabinet, all strong Republicans, all completely loyal. The Federalists were shocked. Not one member of their party had been appointed.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.